Well, hello, Gallatin Valley and online listeners. You are listening to 95.9 FM Bozeman Community Radio. And maybe you're listening to KGVM.org online. Either way, I'm Roxana, and this is Desert Oracle Radio Replay. As I record this episode today, the sky is a frosty blue. It's about 12 degrees. The trees are just like they're just covered with snow, and very unusual for this time of year, which is a little pre-Halloween. Usually we get at least one snowfall in October, but this one's kind of gently gone on for days, so it's very beautiful. But this is a time of gathering around a fire and having some good stories. So this whole episode is going to be dedicated to some stories. We're going to start it off with the latest episode of Desert Oracle Radio, produced by Ken Lane on October 27th, 2023. And it is titled Samhain Stories for All Hallows Eve. And it takes a little different approach to some stories for Halloween. Enjoy.
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert, and here comes Halloween, our ancient festival as the world begins to die again, as it does at the tail end of every year. The leaves fall and decay, the green things wither, the sun hides away, and we remember the dead. Maybe on these chilly nights on the road to winter, the dead remember us, simply because they have nothing else to do, if the schoolyard chant is correct. Thanks to everybody who journeyed out the Friday last for our Halloween time show at Hucumba Hot Springs. Down on the sinister border, an enormous metal wall and ditch of horror between the rich and poor. Cutting through those sun-blasted hills and valleys, forever patrolled by the heavily armed borderland forces. And yet the Hot Springs complex, with its little town and revitalized hotel and restaurant and carefully preserved old bathhouse ruins, that's all very beautiful. And that's always the state of things. So look among the garbage for the flowers, to paraphrase a poet who knew the score. And enjoy these soundscapes by Red, Blue, Black, Silver. Tonight's episode was supposed to be the recording of that show, but as happens about 75% of the time when I do a live event, the recording is unusable because of the kinds of problems that always arise when somebody is simply spread too thin. I cannot run a recording deck back there with the soundboard when I'm spinning tails on the stage, so it goes. That's the way of things. The best things, anyway, maybe they happen and that's that. No concert movie, no yellow and black vinyl box set, no nothing. I didn't even get a poster. They were done up real nice, kind of Old West in style, and printed on the fancy menu paper. But that's all right. It's all right, more or less. As long as you're able to float instead of sink to the bottom. Or maybe that's the real place to be, sunk low at the bottom, like those Riace bronze warriors, 24 centuries alone in the sea, while the world raged above. If those bronze warrior brothers from 450 BC have souls that sometimes come awake, like the great cult statues of Athena of the saints, what would they think of the ugly, brutal, and ultimately dull world around them when they were finally brought up from the inky deep and locked inside a museum? They went down in the time of Herodotus, the time of the oracles, of Homer's epics performed at festivals of the arts, of the muses still appearing in the flesh, of the finest art and architecture and manufacture of all things. And they emerged in a post-atomic, post-space age landscape of pollution and plastic. The babble of the world's worries broadcast to all of us night and day. Two worms in the place of men. I want to tell you the story I told to the people gathered down in the old ruins of the Hot Springs bathhouse last week. And the story starts with a couple of tales I'm going to read to you from the Fairy Faith in Celtic Countries, published in 1911, and my favorite book of Halloween stories. Tales of the Uncanny. A changeling musician. A family at Dalby had an idiot child, and when he was 20 years old, he still sat by the fire just like a baby. A tailor came to the house to work on a day when all the folks were out cutting wheat, and the idiot was left with him. The tailor began to whistle as he sat on the table sewing, and the little idiot, sitting by the fire, said to him, "If you'll not tell anybody when they come in, I'll dance that tune for you." So the little fellow began to dance, and he could step it out splendidly. After this, he says to the tailor, "If you'll not tell anybody when they come in, I'll play the fiddle for you." And the tailor and the idiot spent a very enjoyable afternoon together. But before the family came in from the fields, the poor idiot, as usual, was sitting in a chair by the fire, a big baby who could hardly talk. When the mother came in, she happened to say to the tailor, "You've got a fine chap here," referring to the idiot boy. "Yes, indeed," said the tailor. "We've had a very fine afternoon together. But I think We had better make a good fire and put him on it. Oh, cried the mother, the poor child could never even walk. Ah, replied the tailor, but he can dance and play the fiddle too. And so the fire was made, but when the idiot saw that they were for putting him on it, he pulled from his pocket a ball, and this ball went rolling on ahead of him, and he, going out after it, was never seen again. After this strange story was finished, I asked Mrs. Moore where she had heard it, and she said, I have heard this story ever since I was a girl. I knew the house and the family, and so did my mother. The family's name was Cubbin. A remarkable changeling story, testimony of James Cafferty, a farmer and fisherman born in Kirkpatrick 58 years ago. 40 to 50 years ago, between St. John's and Foxdale, a boy with whom I often played came to our house at nightfall to borrow some candles. And while he was on his way home across the hills, he suddenly saw a little boy and a little woman coming after him. If he ran, they ran. And all the time they gained upon him. Upon reaching home, he was speechless. His hands were altered, turned awry, and his feet also, and his fingernails had grown long in a minute. He remained that way for a week. My father went to the boy's mother and told her it wasn't Robbie at all that she saw. And when my father was for taking the tongs and burning the boy with a piece of glowing turf as a changeling test, the boy screamed awfully. Then my father persuaded the mother to send a messenger to a doctor in the north known for doing charms to see if she might get Robbie back. As the messenger was returning, the mother stepped out of her house. And when she went in again, her own Robbie was there. As soon as Robbie came to himself all right, he said that a little woman and a little man had followed him, and that just as he got home, he was conscious of being taken away by them. But he did not know where they came from nor where they took him. He was unable to tell more than this. Robbie is alive yet, so far as I know. He is Robert Christian of Douglas. These strange tales gathered from the green Celtic lands of Brittany, Wales, Ireland, Scotland, Cornwall, and in this case, the Isle of Man, have more than a passing connection to the dry desert hills of the Southern California desert and mountains along the Mexican border. They have a strong and lasting connection, in fact, to a landmark of that very place in the backcountry of southeastern San Diego County. Because this mystical scholar, Walter Evans Wentz, this honorary American member of William Butler Yeats' Celtic Revival and the person who introduced Tibetan Buddhism to the West through his 1927 publication of the Tibetan Book of the Dead, who added his mother's Welsh maiden name to his own to make him sound more Celtic, lived out his later years in the backcountry of East San Diego County, which which he found to be, you won't be surprised to learn, a completely magical landscape. Walter Evans Wentz had been familiar with San Diego for a long time by then. It was theosophy, the mystic philosophy of Helena Blavatsky, that originally brought him to Point Loma, to the Theosophical Institute there, now occupied by the Point Loma Nazarene College. Theosophy was the original New Age movement, the original mix of spiritualism and Buddhism and yoga and supposedly secret pagan rites from the distant past. It was occult, it was Neoplatonist, it was ancient wisdom. Mostly delivered by a group of interdimensional hidden masters who communicated with a Russian aristocrat. The aforementioned Helena Blavatsky, born in Ukraine and notorious as a spirit medium in New York City by the early 1870s. It was in Manhattan that she created her esoteric religion for Americans. It's when karma entered the English vocabulary, and by the 1890s there were more than 100 theosophist lodges. But the most important of these did not exist in our realm, although we could occasionally enter. That was the White Lodge, where the ancient masters preserved the knowledge of the ages and of the future. There was its opposite, too, the Black Lodge. All of this was part of the occult revival of the late 19th century, along with the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn and other offshoots of Freemasonry and social clubs claiming descent from the Knights Templar. Walter Evans Wentz, born in New Jersey, was entranced by these esoteric developments. He would travel to Egypt and connect with the ancient gods and goddesses there, as the Golden Dawn's Aleister Crowley would do in 1904. By which time, Evans Wentz had moved to a more exotic locale, San Diego, Loma Land, the Theosophical Lodge and College and Commune created by Catherine Tinchley, who bought the site for what was originally called the School for the Revival of the Lost Mysteries of Antiquity. By the time Walter arrived in 1902, there was a yoga school and a Greek-style temple and an open-air theater. From there, he went to Stanford and then on to his mystical and folkloric research in the Celtic lands in Egypt and India and Tibet and Nepal. A globe-trotting life of religious practice and folkloric anthropology that would come to an end with World War II. It was 1941 when he chose San Diego again, this time for his forever home. He had a modest room in a downtown San Diego hotel, the Keystone, on 6th Avenue. That was his official address. And the building was chosen for its proximity to the Central Library and the only vegetarian restaurant in town, the House of Nutrition. But he also spent a lot of time at a place he called Kuchama, what the maps call Tecate Peak. Elevation 3,883 feet above sea level. It's on the way to Hucumba Hot Springs along Highway 94 from San Diego, just across from Barrett Junction. Evans Wentz kept a mystic's cabin on the mountain, a simple structure of wood, room enough to sleep and meditate and read and write. The mountaintop had long been a sacred place for the Kumeyaay people, and Evans Wentz found most of the land held by real estate speculators, including his father, who had moved to La Mesa to partake in that main occupation of San Diego County's business community. In fact, that's what Evans Wentz did for a day job, too, just like his father. So Walter Evans Wentz purchased 3,000 acres of the mountain and surrounding brushland. If you have a Tecate beer can within sight tonight, that's the Holy Mountain on the beer can. All holy places, Evans Wentz wrote in 1942, in varying degrees have been made holy by that same occult power of mind to enhance the psychic character of the atom of matter. They are the ripened fruit of spirituality, the proof of thought's all-conquering and all-transforming supremacy. And Evans Wentz should know, he invented much of the supposed Kumeyaay religious significance of Tecate Peak through the same well-intended exaggeration and reinterpretation of obscure rituals and memory that colored his misunderstandings of Tibetan Buddhism. But mistakes go well with any enthusiasm. And we cannot fault Walter Evans Wentz for his love of the old mountain he called Puchama. He died in 1965, the year I was born. He spent his final months at the Self-Realization Fellowship in Encinitas, what the surfers call Swamis. Walter had many close friends there, yogis and gurus and swamis he'd first known in India between the world wars. So along with the classic books that bear his name, the fairy faith in Celtic countries, the Tibetan Book of the Dead, Walter Evans Wentz added one more, Kuchama and Sacred Mountains. Finally published in 1989, but nearly finished at the time of his death at the ripe old age of 87 years. If you've read Paramahansa Yogananda's classic autobiography of a yogi, the book that set George Harrison and millions of other Westerners on a path of fascination with Vedic and Indian culture, you may remember the introduction to that famous work is written by the yogi's dear friend, Walter Evans Wentz, in which he wrote these words. To its illustrious author, whom I have had the pleasure of knowing both in India and America, may every reader render due appreciation and gratitude. His unusual life document is certainly one of the most revealing of the depths of the Hindu mind and heart, and of the spiritual wealth of India, ever to be published in the West. Happy Halloween time, friends. On On Sunday, October 29, this Halloween weekend, I'm doing the first old-fashioned Desert Oracle Campfire Stories in Yucca Valley at the local pub, the Tiny Pony. This will happen out back with a campfire and everything at 8 p.m. But get there early if you want a seat. Or if you want to see. They've got good food from the kitchen and more spirits than Jack Skellington would know what to do with. I did stop by last night to figure out how we'd set it up, and I have to admit the owner I was talking to seemed a little spooked regarding the enthusiastic reaction to doing this event there. So, be chill. There are no tickets. It's not a theater or anything. It's a neighborhood bar with a backyard patio. I'll have some books and stickers and back issues available if you want those things, and that'll be after the stories. Whatever you do, have a good Halloween weekend. Isaacs and across the great Mojave Wilderness, this is Desert Oracle Radio. Musical soundscapes on this program by Red, Blue, Black, Silver. And I'm Ken Lane, your Desert Oracle, until I'm gone. And the next one is appointed by the senior partners. Sometimes, maybe 20 or 30 minutes away from home, you'll notice some random car on the highway, and that car will take the exact 7 turns you take because it's also going to your house. And you already know before she even gets out of the car. You already know before you open the physical or electronic letter that's either disturbingly brief or horrifically long. You know you should have stayed in the cave today, should have never left the temple grounds. I don't know what to call it, but I know it's a lot more frequent these days. Maybe it's a natural learned ability to figure out the likely result of 2 entities in a certain situation. Which way the wind blows. Maybe it's the realization that no single event or cluster of events, no matter the momentary outrage or delight or dread it causes, really matters much in the long run. That even in a supposed age of wonders, everything is pretty much expected and ultimately unsatisfying, which is why it will be quickly discarded for something else. Or maybe, unlike the so-called artificial intelligence, we are eventually smart enough to understand that there really are only a couple of outcomes possible for anything. Good night from the Voice of the Desert.
Oh, in self Realization Fellowship. Oh my gosh, that brought back memories. I was a part of that when I was a teenager back in Nebraska in high school. And my physics teacher failed me in physics class because I questioned whether the physics that we understand is the only physics anywhere that there are to understand. Thinking, well, you know, if life is all illusion, is this one? Well, anyway, it was the only class I ever failed. So, that poor teacher. Okay, anyway, on to the next. We are at the bottom half of the hour. You're still listening to KGVM 95.9 FM, Bozeman Community Radio, and you're listening to Desert Oracle Radio Replay. I am recording this late in the week, just before Halloween, and I've shoveled the deck, and I've decided to come inside and sit by the wood stove. The fire's blazing in there, and it's nice and cozy. And I'm going to give you a nice treat now. My friend Marlene is a neighbor that every year she hosts a party in the fall to bring all of the neighbors out here together. And it's always Halloween-themed. I don't know how many skeletons she had around her house, at least 10, I think, this year, and I guess every year she gets one more. Anyway, she volunteers at the Gallatin Historical Museum, and she is quite the storyteller. So this year, she began telling her story on the main floor of her Halloween-themed decorated house. I'm going to play you the first part.
Ingeborg Wiken was born in Norway. When she was a teenager, her parents informed her that they were moving to America, the land of milk and honey, where everybody's dreams are realized. She was crestfallen when she heard that they were moving to America because she was in love with Sven, who lived down the road. Well, when she told Sven about it, and by the way, Ingeborg and Sven had been dating or courting for years and secretly were engaged. Sven told her, "Don't worry, I'll come to America with you. And when we get settled, we can get married." So, of course, Ingeborg packed in her suitcase her beautiful handmade wedding gown that she had been working on for months. When they got to America, the Wiekens decided that Iowa was the place for them. They knew farming, and so that was a good place for them. Sven, once he got to America, was just totally distracted by all the beautiful American girls. He just kept turning his head, and as the weeks went by, he grew more and more cold and distant, until finally, just 2 weeks before their wedding date, he jilted her. Ingeborg was just heartbroken, and she ran away. She was also pretty humiliated, and she ran north to the woods of Wisconsin. So she's in Wisconsin woods. It is cold and foggy. If you came to my party last year, it was just like that. Okay, and it was cold, and she's just totally lost. She doesn't know what to do, and she's about ready to give up. And then she sees a glow off in the distance. And she thinks, well, I think I'll go that way. It was like a beacon just drawing her. And so she walked until finally she could see what the glow was. It was beautiful trees all lit up in different colors. And in the middle of the trees was a very cozy cabin. Come on up and see it.
At this point, she took us upstairs to a room decorated like a cozy cabin, complete with a witch and a section where there were two old-style school desks, and there was a little girl figure in the front desk. And on the back desk, well, listen to what was on that desk behind her.
So Ingeborg knocked on the door, and a huge old lady answered the door.
Oh my gosh.
She looked like a witch. But she was kind to Ingeborg. She brought her in, and she could see she was shivering. She sat her down next to the fire to warm her up, gave her a mug of grog, and served the most delicious stew that Ingeborg had ever tasted. And then when dinner was dinner, both of them sat down and had more grog. And by this time, Ingeborg is feeling pretty relaxed and wants to tell the old lady, the witch, her life story, her short life story. I came from Norway to America. My beau jilted me before my wedding, and here I am in the woods with no money, no place to go, and I don't really know what to do. Well, the witch said, I am getting kind of on and with the years, and I could use some help. Why don't you stay and live with me? And so Ingeborg, who really didn't have any other choice, decided, yeah, she would. Well, the witch really was very kind in the sense she taught her how to cook and to use the most special spices that would bring out, you know, the flavors and the aromas and the food. She also, of course, taught her magic. And so she taught her various potions, and with a magic wand, you know, she'd do spells, how to light up the trees, and how to turn people into animals that are misbehaving and bring people back from the dead, and you know, witch things. Well, Ingeborg thought she should, you know, help out by getting a job. And so the first year she was there, she decided that she would teach. She taught the children of the forest, and she was a very fair but strict teacher. The kids really learned a lot from her, but they complained, we can never get away with anything. It's like she has eyes in the back of her head. One day, Tommy brought a frog to stick down Susie's shirt, and before he could even get it close to her shirt, Miss Weekend took out her wand and turned Tommy into a frog, and he had to stay on his desk for the rest of the day until the day was over. Tommy never did that again, and he never did anything bad again. But as we know, teachers don't make very much money. So the next year she thought, well, I think I'll go into Eau Claire, and I'll see if I can get a cooking job, because really the old woman has taught me a lot. And she found pretty quick that the male chefs made a lot more money than the female chefs. And so she decided to disguise herself as a man. So as she was working, she was no longer Ingeborg, but she was Billy Williams. That went along quite well. Everybody liked her cooking. But somehow the word got back to Iowa, to her family, that that's where she was. And one evening, her brother shows up at the cabin, and he tells her, "Mom and Dad want you back, so I'm bringing you back." And she said, "No, I'm not going back." He said, "No, I'm taking you back tomorrow morning." Well, as you could probably guess, the next morning, she was gone. She had run away again. This time she went to St. Paul, Minnesota. And she no longer was Billy Williams, but she changed her name to Sammy Williams. She still dressed as a man, and she felt pretty uncomfortable that maybe her brother might find her, so she didn't stay anywhere too long. And so she worked her way through Minnesota, through North Dakota, into Montana, and worked her way all the way into Gallatin County, as you could imagine. And she settled in Manhattan, Montana. There, well, she got a job cooking for some of the ranches during harvest time and during the roundup time. She also worked for Heaps, by the way. Yeah. So one day, she's on Main Street and she sees Sven across the street. And she is thinking, huh, let's see if it really is. So I'm going to say dressed as a man, obviously, so it's Sammy, goes across the street, follows him into a bar, and sits down next to him in the bar. Now, it definitely was Sven, but Sven did not recognize Ingeborg at all. And he is just spilling his guts. He tells her, "Well, I'm from Iowa, I'm married, I have several kids, but you know, I travel a lot for work, and I find a beautiful woman wherever I go. And I, I gotta have a beautiful woman, and I love them and I leave them." Well, Sammy just smiles and says, "I see you're a man after my own heart. Let me buy you a drink." So when the drink arrives, of course, Sven is looking around the bar for a really pretty girl. And while he's doing this, Ingeborg, or Sammy, pulls a little vial out of coat jacket and puts it in the drink. Sammy says, as he gets up and they finish their drinks, "You know, if you really want the prettiest girls in Bozeman, let me tell you where to find them. They are at the gym. They're the ones that work out all the time. They have great bodies. They're wearing tiny little leotards. That's really where you should go. And there is just one the next street over. It's called the Ridge. It's called the Ridge. It's on Mendenhall." So he says, I hope you have a good time in Bozeman. I gotta go." And he leaves. So Sven is thinking as he gets up, "Yeah, I think maybe I will check out the Ridge." And so he is walking over to the Ridge. Let's head on down.
And now Marlene took us all down to the lower level of the house, where we saw a room filled with exercise equipment occupied by skeletons.
Is hitting the front door of the Ridge. The potion is in full effect. And he goes in the gym and he's thinking, "Oh my goodness, I can't believe how many beautiful women are here.
Oh, dear.
So, he's looking around the gym and he can't hardly figure out which woman he wants. They're all just so beautiful. And so finally, after looking at them all, he decides on a gorgeous blonde. And he goes up to her and he starts, he puts on his charm and he's flirting with her and he has the best pickup lines. And he convinces her to go out to dinner with him. And of course, he wines and dines her. And at the end of the evening, he convinces her to go back to his hotel room. Things are heating up in the hotel room.
Is this X-rated?
This is X-rated. Yes.
The scene for the last part of this story takes place in a bedroom. In the bed is a scarecrow with his arm around a skeleton with a glamorous blonde wig, a knife in her hand.
So he gets her in bed, and of course he leans over to give her a very amorous kiss. And just like that, the spell is broken. And he sees exactly what we see. And she's no longer smiling or giggling. She is angry and yelling at him, and she has a knife. She pulls out the knife. She slashes up his face. He, of course, jumps out of bed. He runs out of the room. He runs down the hall, only half dressed, and out the front door of the hotel. And there waiting for him is Sammy. And Sammy's got the wand, and he hits him with the wand and turns him into a skunk. Why a skunk? Well, this is a black and white party. And there is an end. Well, we all know skunks stink. And from that time on, women, wherever he went, were repulsed by him.
Oh, yeah.
So, anyway.
And at this point, Marlene tells us the true story that inspired her tale.
This is from a newspaper article called The Missoulian, from The Missoulian. The mysterious Sammy Williams, a resident of Manhattan, Montana for 18 years, who dropped dead there from apoplexy. I had to look that word up.
What is that?
It's like a sudden brain death, kind of like a stroke. Anyway, we don't use that word anymore. Apoplexy. Was disclosed by her death when the undertaker came to prepare the body. Sammy was found to be a woman who was Miss Ingeborg Wiken. Miss Wiken was born in Norway some 80 years ago, and it is claimed before she came to America with her parents, she was courted by a young Norwegian, Sven Norum, and the two became engaged. Then the Wiken family came to America, and they settled in Alamaki County, Iowa. There are some members of the families that still reside there. Ingeborg came with them, and Sven Norum did too. Not long after the arrival in America, Sven became cold and distant to Ingeborg and finally jilted her for some reason not known. She was heartbroken. And in fact, she was so heartbroken that she could not endure it to stay with her folks and among her acquaintances. And she suddenly disappeared. And although she was sought high and low, she was never found. Shortly thereafter, in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, a short but strong young man with coal black hair and a smooth face, which he never had to shave, and his voice was rather soft and piping, but he was strong as an ox, and he mixed freely with the woodsmen there, and it was not long before he went into the woods as a cook. He was such a good cook that as long as he was here, he could get $100 or more per month. And he amassed considerable money, which he invested in real estate and in other ways. He made Eau Claire his home till the late 70s or early 80s. This is 1870s, 1880s. And in later years, there were rumors floating about that Billy Williams, which was the name he gave, or Billy Cook, as he was generally called, was not what he represented himself to be. In fact, he was a woman in disguise. But they were only rumors. Nobody knew, but somehow or another the report was started. But Billy still continued cooking in the woods, going out with the boys, spending his money lavishly for liquor, but never drinking more than he could handle. And he would go out with the girls, taking them dancing, and had a great time. And he had many very lovable traits. And many a poor and needy person in Eau Claire remembers to this day his kindness in a time of need. It was a favorite custom with Williams to casually visit the homes of the needy. And in going away, he would leave $5, $10, $15 without making known his name. And he often donated big sums to charity, but with the request that his name be withheld. Many such instances of his liberality are now recalled by the old-timers in the city. But there moved to the city some years later a family from Alamaki County, Iowa, neighbors of the Weekend family. And they were acquainted with the facts leading up to the disappearance of Ingeborg Weekend. And after seeing and hearing of Billy Williams, they became convinced that Billy and Ingeborg were one and the same person. And the Weekend family was soon notified, and a brother of Ingeborg was soon here to persuade Billy to return home. Instead of returning home, he left quickly for St. Paul, and since that time has never set foot in Eau Claire, Wisconsin. For several years, he cooked in North Dakota, still masquerading successfully as a man, and for 18 years in Manhattan, Montana, where he lived until his sudden death. By the time he arrived, he was going not by the name of Billy anymore. He changed his name to Sammy Williams. She was supposed to come. This was kind of my boss that I work with at the museum. She wrote this, Rachel Phillips. He was a she. She wrote this for the Museum Quarterly. Written by Rachel Phillips, Sammy Williams, alias Ingeborg Weekend, might have been a talented cook as well as a kind, caring, charitable soul throughout her life here on Earth. Yet, she became quite famous upon her death. She put Manhattan, Montana on the map, not by her good cooking for various ranch outfits such as Hebe's Ranch, the Meadowbrook Ranch, the number one ranch for 18 years. She put us on the map by disguising as a man.
Huh.
Okay. And so there is a large headstone in the Manhattan area. It's the Meadowview Cemetery that looks like this.
Since you can't see the picture of the tombstone, I found it online and I'm going to read what's inscribed there. It says, "A female whose real name is unknown, but who has been for many years known as Sammy Williams, died December 10th, 1908, age about 68 years." Well, I want to thank Ken Lane for sharing his Desert Oracle radio episodes with community radio stations everywhere. And I especially want to thank Marlene Caulfield for her incredible storytelling. I hope she returns with more local stories. Thank you, Gallatin Valley and the world, for listening. As always, you can call me and leave me a message about anything on your mind. The number is 406-404-6246. You can text that number as well. Remember to spread the word that you can hear this program on the air at 95.9 FM Bozeman Community Radio, or you can stream it online at kgbm.org at 7 p.m. Sunday and 9 a.m. Monday. Our past Desert Oracle Radio replay episodes are also available on demand on the kgbm.org website. Well, that's it for today. So till next time, listeners, be safe, stay well, and sweet dreams. The Cure is taking us out today with their song, Lullaby. Happy Halloween!
His arms all around me, and he's turning my eyes.